This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Representative Chris Smith as he joins Tony to talk about action the House is taking to help protect religious minorities in Syria and Iraq. Also, Attorney Cleta Mitchell is here to discuss Senator Bernie Sanders' attempt to disqualify a Trump appointee because he is a Christian. But first, terrorists have been striking targets in Europe at an alarming rate recently, and Robert Spencer, who is the director of Jihad Watch and a best-selling author, joined Tony on Tuesday to talk about these atrocities.
Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So what do we know about today's attack and its connection with radical Islam?
Well, this was certainly another Muslim. He was crying out, "This is for Syria." And, of course, Syria is a flashpoint for a lot of jihad propaganda, where supposedly Western armies are committing atrocities against Muslims on a large scale. And this comes around many, many times that Muslims are called upon to take revenge for what is supposedly happening in Syria by attacking civilians on the streets of Britain and the U.S. and also in Western Europe. So this is just another Ramadan attack. There is a promise in the Islamic traditions that jihad attacks during Ramadan have 70 times more the reward than ones outside Ramadan, and that's why we're seeing such an uptick of this kind of thing in the last few days.
So is this something that will pass after the Ramadan celebration ends, or are we seeing an increase in Islamic terror attacks? Because, I mean, we've seen quite a few in the last 12 months.
Well, you know, I think we're going to have a steadily increasing rate because, quite aside from Ramadan, there is the massive influx of the Muslim migrants into Europe and also into North America, unless President Trump is ultimately able to pass some kind of a travel ban or to get some kind of a travel ban through the courts. But in the meantime, there are these refugees or so-called refugees streaming in. The Islamic State or ISIS vowed as long ago as February 2015 to flood Europe with refugees, as many as 500,000, they said, and to infiltrate the refugee stream and send jihadis into Europe and into North America among the peaceful refugees. We're seeing that happen now. It's already happened that jihadis have struck who have come in with the refugee stream, and we're going to see a whole lot more of that.
Are we going to see, as this increase happens in Europe, are we going to see that potentially happen here in the United States? Is this something we need to be watching for?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, in a certain sense, it's already happened. Because remember that on December 2nd, 2015, Syed Rizwan Farooq and Tashfeen Malik, a married couple, a Muslim couple in San Bernardino, California, murdered 15 people at a Christmas party. Now, remember that Tashfeen Malik was a refugee who had been vetted by five separate U.S. agencies and found to be clear. Well, she wasn't, but this just shows the failure, the futility in light of the mandate in Islam to deceive unbelievers during a war between the believers and the unbelievers. It shows the futility of the vetting process, but it shows that this kind of thing can and will and has already happened in the U.S.
I've been talking about this since the attacks over the weekend with various members of Congress and others we've had on the program this week. But the fact that the president has been so adamant about his ban from the six countries, the ban on those coming that present potential threats to America, is it that, I mean, man, my thought is, I mean, this guy, he's pretty worked up about this, and I think it's because he knows that America is at risk, the benefit that he has of the intelligence reports, and I think that, he's taking aggressive actions to try to protect America. I mean, is he gone too far, or is he being, is what he's trying to do beneficial to our country?
No, there's no doubt it's beneficial. I mean, look, you really have a hard choice that has to be faced in this. And there are only two choices. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, but this is the situation. We either inconvenience some people who are harmless, or we let in some people who are harmful. In the second case, Americans will die in jihad attacks. Now, so far, except for President Trump, pretty much everybody in the political class in both parties has said, essentially, that we just have to settle for Americans getting killed because we cannot, above all, do anything to inconvenience those who are harmless. And the president, for the first time, is the first person to take the different tack and say, no, we're going to inconvenience some of these harmless people in order to keep out those who are harmful. And that is really the only two choices that we have.
Now, what's driving this is a theology. I mean, this is a worldview that the Islamists have. I mean, how can you eradicate a theology, a mindset? How can this be combated?
This is the huge question that nobody asks, and you are to be commended for asking it, because this is the most important question. The United States has never done this. We went into Iraq and Afghanistan and supervised the installation of Sharia states instead of standing for our own values. We do need to confront it. We need to confront it in many ways. In the first place, there needs to be a concerted effort to show people that it actually is not true. And, of course, the U.S. government may not want to get involved in such a thing because they might think that somehow violating the Establishment Clause or something of that kind. But until we disabuse, as you quite rightly say, until we disabuse people of this ideology, this problem is going to continue. And so I think that the main thing that the U.S. government can do on that basis is to stand for its own principles, and to, if we have any presence in Muslim countries in the future, to make it clear that women who are beaten, that Christians who are persecuted, that Muslims who want to leave Islam and are in fear of death, all these people who are victimized by Islamic law will find refuge among the Americans. And then I think we would find many, many Muslims who would come to us who don't want to live under Islamic law any more than anybody else does.
I think you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, I think that could, in fact, be what we see happen under this administration. Robert, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. We'll have you back on to talk more about this in the future.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.
You can find out more about Jihad Watch when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at an effort by the House of Representatives to curb the genocide happening against minorities in the Middle East.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. In a panel discussion that includes a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney, tactics used by the transgender lobbyists are exposed and strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back are explored. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion to combat the transgender ideology in public schools.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Tuesday's edition of Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey as they discussed House Resolution 390, the Iraq and Syria Genocide Emergency Relief Accountability Act. Here's how Tony got things started.
Congressman Chris Smith, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you so very much, and it just passed, so thank you.
And that was on a suspension vote,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And was there any opposition?
No, there wasn't. But getting to the floor, I first introduced it last September, and we've been pushing, you know, since then. So that's the better part of 9 months. But it's now passed and on its way to to the Senate.
That's what people make when they make reference to that takes an act of Congress. It could be the best thing since sliced bread, but just getting a vote on it sometimes is a tremendous, you got so many hurdles you have to overcome to get this before your colleagues. But fortunately, leadership working with you and your determination, you got it there. Tell our listeners what this bill would do.
Well, what it does is ensures that especially faith-based entities like the Archdiocese or the Chaldean Catholic Church in Erbil and others that have been basically bypassed by the humanitarian aid funding streams over the last several years. If they're competent, they're providing the effective provision of humanitarian assistance, they become eligible to receive this money. And unfortunately, I've had 9 hearings over the last 3+ years dedicated in whole or in part to, you know, this whole issue of genocide and the fact that so many Christians have not gotten assistance. This ensures that they get it. And I went there right before Christmas, Tony, and I went to the internally displaced persons camp, one of them, in Erbil, Iraq, and was shocked to see, you know, I knew it was the case, but when you see it, all these kids, all these families, and no, you know, U.S. assistance. Private charities stepped up to the plate, but, you know, we know that the church leaders have been triaging the money over the last several years, including right now, in terms of food aid and medicines, because the U.S. government has refused to assist.
Yeah, when you talk about the funding stream for these relief efforts, you're talking about American tax dollars that are used for these purposes, but they've been intentionally bypassing these faith-based organizations under the previous administration. They're on the ground, in many cases, doing the work, all with private donations, but this will help them reach more because the need is so great.
That's exactly right. And the Archbishop Huerta, who I met with, and he's the one who invited me there, they're going to be running out of food in June. And so this is really an urgent issue. And there's at least, you know, over 12,000 families that who will be hurt if the food, medicine, and the like is not provided. And I tried. You know, at the hearings, I would ask the pointed questions of administration witnesses last year, the year before, and I would get, well, we're looking into it, Congressman. We'll look into it and get back to you. And then I find when I went over there and went to the one camp that was about 10 minutes drive from the Consul General's office, they had not even been to the camp until they knew I was coming. There's something wrong with that picture.
So that's the embassy, the personnel at the embassy, 10 minutes away from this refugee camp, and had never even been there.
Never even been there. And then they told me not to go. It was too unsafe. So I went without him, without diplomatic security, and frankly, it was a joke. You know, I was met with these children singing Christmas carols, and you know, I've been in refugee camps over the world. I just got back from South Sudan just 4 days ago. You know, those camps do carry some risk, but this one and this situation was safer than most. But they didn't even want me to go.
Now, what are you hearing, Congressman Smith, as you talk to the survivors of genocide? Their people are being targeted, not just for harassment, but for extermination. What are you hearing from them?
Well, the leadership, the clergy, to a person, expressed concern that where is America? Why aren't you helping us with these humanitarian needs? You know, they're going to some camps, but not to theirs. We heard repeatedly from the Christians themselves, including the leaders, how their faith, and I asked the question, are undiminished, they are strong, they're resilient, they love the Lord, they have been traumatized by beheadings and rapes, loss of loved ones, their churches firebombed, they exploded, even booby-trapped if they try to go back, and yet their faith, like persecuted Christians in the first century, are stronger than ever. And I would ask question after question, family after family, about their faith. And it was like, you know, I when I get a bad editorial, I think I'm having a bad day. And these people they're just saints. They are just unbelievable people.
When you see this and you see their faith and their determination to live out their faith, and you see what's been happening in America, where, you know, we've in many ways we acquiesced, not everybody, but many acquiesced to the previous administration that, you know, obviously wasn't what we see happening in the Middle East, but there was certainly, I would say, persecution of religious people here in this country, whether it was through, you know, the HHS mandate that made people violate their faith. I mean, I think, you know, I think we can take a a lesson from them in being bold and courageous and standing up for our faith. You know, because we're not talking about losing our lives. Maybe we get somebody to tweet something about us or mock us. But, I mean, look, those folks are willing to die for what they believe.
Tony, it's an absolute inspiration for us to be bolder, as Christians can never hate the opposition, but we have to stand up to them and bend into the wind and not with it. And I think it's far too easy for so many to just go along. Christians are being disinvited from the public square in many of the Western democracies throughout the world, including the United States under the previous administration. You're right, those attacks on conscience were very calculated, contrary to what President Obama said he would do when he went to Notre Dame and gave that infamous speech at Notre Dame talking about protecting conscience rights, and then did precisely the opposite. We need to stand up. And thankfully, and Mike Pence gave a great speech this morning at a prayer breakfast, the Catholic prayer breakfast, and he's just a wonderful believer. But he talked about, the importance of faith and being informed by it. And I think we have to take the responsibilities of our faith even more to heart and be inspired by what the Christians are suffering around the world. I was just in South Sudan last week, went to refugee camps, three of them, and met with so many believers whose resiliency was astonishing. Had lost everything, had nothing, eating very little, hoping for clean water and some medicine if they're sick or their children, and yet their faith perseveres. So again, we need to, realize that sometimes, it was Solzhenitsyn who said that it was when he lost everything and was in the gulag of the Soviet Union that he realized, how easy it is to be compromised when you don't see the distinction between good and evil, which he saw so clearly under communist dictatorship.
Are you seeing this, that there is a sense that there has been a sea change when it comes to America's foreign policy? I know we're not seeing it everywhere yet, but the messages, as you mentioned, Mike Pence this morning speaking at the Catholic prayer breakfast, in every one of his speeches, he has been emphasizing the commitment of this administration to religious freedom. And that's got to be traveling around the world.
It is traveling around the world, and there is a sense that the culture of life, the protection of the innocent unborn, is now America's new position. I remember trying to explain to diplomats and parliamentarians around the world how the executive branch may have one view, but the House of Representatives is very pro-life, particularly under the Republican leadership that we have today, Kevin McCarthy and company. They're all very pro-life. And it was often a gee whiz fact to them, like, really? Because we get just the opposite from the Obama people, because they pushed hard to promote an unfettered right to abortion with no conscience rights around the globe. And now, thankfully, we have a life-friendly administration, and nobody epitomizes it more than Mike Pence. I remember at the March for Life every year, he would say, "I'm Mike Pence, and I'm pro-life." And he'd get a big applause every time. And his speech this year to the march was brilliant.
Yeah, I think there's no question about this administration's commitment on the life issue. Chris, great to talk with you.
And Tony, great to talk to you. And thank you so much for calling.
You can find out more about Representative Chris Smith when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, is Bernie Sanders imposing a religious litmus test on President Trump's appointees?
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. This is a must-attend event to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Franklin Graham, and many more. Register now at the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. This past Thursday, former presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, during a confirmation hearing, had a confrontation with Russell Vogt, the nominee for Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Here's how Tony Perkins set up his conversation on this issue with political law attorney Cleta Mitchell.
This was, it's hard to describe Bernie Sanders in the bigotry that he expressed toward Russell in this exchange.
Let me get to this issue that has bothered me and bothered many other people. And that is, in the piece that I referred to that you wrote for a publication called Resurgent, you wrote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time. Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
With the statement of faith of Wheaton
College. I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world.
This sounds like an inquisition that's going on here. Cleta, have you ever seen anything like that?
Well, I've never seen it happen in this context. Curiously, I was just having a conversation yesterday with someone some people who were telling me that when the movie The Passion of the Christ came out, that it was condemned for being anti-Semitic because it shows the trial of Jesus, and this all happening at the hands of the Jewish leaders, and that's somehow anti-Semitic. I mean, the fact is, I am aghast when I read and I hear this statement from Bernie Sanders. I mean, I thought that Russell Vogt, who I know, who is absolutely a wonderful person, but the fact is our faith teaches us, and if you are a practicing Christian, as I am, as you are, as many of your listeners are, if you believe in the centrality of Jesus Christ as the Son of God and that no man cometh to the Father but by him, then yes, we are all condemned. It doesn't matter if you're Muslim or whatever you are, if you do not believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and accept him as your Savior, then you are not going to go to heaven. It's that simple. I think that what this basically is saying is if you believe that, according to Bernie Sanders and Senator Van Hollen from Maryland, which was, let's not forget, was established as a colony that was predominantly Catholic. But if you believe what we believe, you are not eligible to work in the federal government. That's what they're saying.
And this is, as you said, this is an orthodox view of Scripture that it's the centrality of Christianity. Jesus Christ, as you pointed out.
It is the very basic of Christianity. And it's right. Like Bernie Sanders has decided that, of course, you know, I'm sure he doesn't want to get into our beliefs about, you know, the Jewish people and being God's chosen people and all that kind of thing. But that's basically the truth of the matter is, in its simplest form, Bernie Sanders is saying that because Russell Vogt is a practicing, believing Christian who has said that the people who are following Islam and who are Muslims are condemned and are not going to heaven, that's the truth as I see it. And that would be that we are not eligible to be in a position of authority to be confirmed by the United States Senate. That's what he's saying.
But Russell went on to make very clear that we still, because of our faith, we see that every human being is created in the image of God and therefore worthy of respect and dignity. And that's why our country has been so welcoming of different people of different faiths, and they have that freedom. And now the very people who gave that freedom to this country are the ones that are being targeted to have their freedoms taken away.
It's absolutely astonishing. And I think that what this demonstrates is how really we are under assault as Christians. And it has been happening bit by bit by bit, beginning with the war in court and the whole notion of that we can't have prayer in schools, we can't have moments of silence at high school football games or commencement, and the whole assault on believing Christians by the ACLU. I mean, this is not new.
No.
This is not new.
But it's a new level.
Now it's coming to the highest level of the country. Now it's manifesting itself in not only can you not practice, but if you are practicing your religion and you are a faithful Christian, you can't be confirmed by the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and that cannot stand. Cleta, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk with you, but we're not going to let go of this one.
As Cleta explained, our Constitution guarantees there will be no religious litmus test. Americans should never be forced to choose between their faith and public service. Ask your senators to pledge to not oppose nominees on the basis of their religious views by signing our petition. You can do that at tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.